We call to order the Natural Resources Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Monday, February 14th, 2005, and we are continuing with the public hearing on the budget presentation for the Department of Environmental Quality. Mr. Siebert, do you want to set the stage, or are we ready to go?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the department left off about halfway through discussing their performance measures, and the director's here to continue that discussion.
Ms. Halleck.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Stephanie Halleck, the director of the Department of Environmental Quality. And if you would, again, go to Appendix Roman numeral I-3, we finished on page 22. We're going to start on page 22 of that report, performance measure number 9. We also have a handout, which is a one-page summary table, three-hole punch, that updates some of the targets that you asked about and fills in some of the data gaps that we didn't have last time we spoke with you. And I'd be happy to answer any questions about that. Otherwise, we will start with performance measure number 9. And I was hoping to complete the performance measure discussion in about a half hour, because I know you want to get to the program priorities and reductions. And this is our last day before you, I believe. So if I may, I'll start ahead. On the, yes, sir.
Start.
Representative. Oh, go ahead. Okay, the purpose of performance measure number 9 is to encourage the reuse of reclaimed wastewater from municipal treatment plants, sewage treatment plants, and industrial processes. This water is treated to be protective of the environment and human health and can then be used for other purposes such as golf course irrigation. Reusing this water helps conserve groundwater and fresh water from our rivers and streams and can also support economic development. For example, the golf courses at both Bandon Dunes and Prineville are irrigated with treated reclaimed wastewater, and the wetlands at the Oregon Garden are part of Silverton's wastewater treatment system. The measure shows that we're on track to meet our target of 10% by 2005 of our permitted facilities producing reclaimed water for reuse. As shown on the one-page summary that we just handed out today, the top of the second page, the performance measure kind of got split on that page, we achieved 7.3% in 2003, 7.8% in 2004, and we've added the targets for 2006 and 2007 that you requested last time we met. 2006 is 12% and 15% for 2007.
Stephanie, just a question.
Yes.
Do you have anything in, I don't see it here, is it in gallons or acre feet? And the other thing is, they can't move it in the water system, so is it trucked?
Representative Krieger, that is an option. I don't have the gallons with me, but I can find out.
I just wondered what the volume was, you know, compared to.
Holly Schroeder, the water administrator, may be able to add some detail.
Representative Krieger, for the record, Holly Schroeder, Minister of the Water Quality Division. At this point in time, we don't track the gallonage of water, wastewater reuse. That is an improvement to the measure that we want to make, and we have been in the process of completing a data system upgrade that we'll be implementing later this year that will allow us to capture that information, because ultimately we think that will be a more useful performance measure. But at this point in time, we don't collect that, but we're working on that change.
How do they transport it from the plant to wherever it's needed? Is that truck? Is it truck?
Representative Krieger, members of the committee, sometimes it's trucked. Often there's actually pipe laid. And so finding property that for reuse that is close to the treatment plant is often an issue.
Okay, thank you.
Performance measure number 10, if there's no further questions on number 9. This is on page 24 of the report in your binder. This pertains to the progress that has been made in destroying the chemical weapons at the Umatilla Army Depot. Succinctly put, we're behind on meeting the target of 20% chemical agent destroyed by 2005, and I think I discussed with you last time we spoke that the facilities had a number of mechanical and operational problems. We're requesting officially to revise this target to 6% for 2005 and to add the targets for 2006 and 2007 that are shown on the one-page handout that we gave you today. And we expect that the facility will meet those projected targets. They seem to be getting the bugs worked out, if you will. And if there are no questions on number 10, I would move to number 11.
Yes.
So are those cumulative, or that's per year, 18% in 2006 and 27%? That's the total amount. So you're looking at, that would be 45%. So we're trying to get done with that one. 2010, is that?
Senator Nelson, I think the original treaty deadline was 2012. But and they had originally estimated that it would take 4 years from the time that the facility opened to process all the munitions, and they started processing last year. So we're estimating still being able to make the treaty deadline at this point.
Thank you.
And those percentages are a percent of the total stockpile that has been destroyed by that time. Performance measure number 11 is on page 26 of the report in the binder. And this addresses mercury. One of our strategic priorities is to protect Oregonians from toxics. Much of that effort so far has been focused on ways to remove mercury from the environment. Almost 82 pounds was removed in 2003, which was exceeded our target, as you can see, by quite a bit. We don't have the data yet for 2004, but we hope to make 100 pounds. And these are from collection events for, like, fluorescent tubes for the dental community, for their amalgam and things like that, thermostats, thermometers, and we partner with others to do those collection events.
Yes, Senator Shields.
Are there any trace elements of mercury showing up in water, or water additives, or anything that goes into water?
Well, we do have, Senator Shields, committee members, that there is our recently adopted a water quality toxic standard for environmental water quality standards that I discussed with you before, does have a standard for mercury. So we do regulate mercury in discharge permits and regulate, or we will be regulating them, and also in air quality permits. But that's for the regular folks that we would permit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the short answer is yes, but I'm not sure that's really the question.
It is, actually. So permitted, is it a zero tolerance? I mean, if you're focusing on mercury here, this way, I'm assuming that companies that have permits would almost have to have a zero tolerance.
Senator Shields, in general, they almost no pollutants are zero discharge in terms of regulated air and water permits. On the water permitting side, we actually do not have an approved standard yet from EPA, so we've not even started putting the mercury limits in water permits yet. On the air side, Andy Ginsberg is here from Air Quality, but I'm not sure on the air discharge. Do you want to add to that?
For the record, Andy Ginsberg, Air Quality Administrator, DEQ. Senator Shields, the air quality standards set by the United States Environmental Protection Agency are based on the maximum control levels that have been achieved at other at well-controlled facilities around the country, so they're not a zero-discharge standard.
Now I know what it's not. I still don't know what it is, right?
Senator Shields, we can get you more detail on those standards for both air and water if you'd like
at
that.
At some point in the future, thank you.
We'd be happy
That's
to do
fine.
That.
And provide that to the entire committee.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to.
You bet.
Moving on to performance measure number 12. This is page 28 of the packet in the binder. Performance measure number 12 is also Oregon benchmark number 84, and it tracks our progress in cleaning up leaking underground tanks and other contaminated sites. When you count both the tank cleanups and the cleanups for hazardous substance sites, we are on target to meet our goals. When you look at them separately, you'll see that the rate of cleanup for contaminated sites is slightly slower than that for tanks, and that's largely because cleaning up the hazardous sites is more complex than cleaning up a tank site. And on the handout that I provided today, we've, again, projected our targets out 2006-2007 as well.
Now, Stephanie, are those cumulative numbers again here in terms of...
That's correct.
Okay. So you have defined a finite universe of how big the problem is out there.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Performance measure 13. This is on page 30 of the packet. Also pertains to cleanup. I think I spoke a bit about this when I did the program overview. This pertains to the abandoned mine cleanup problem. The performance measure measures how we are doing on assessing, identifying, and assessing these mines for contaminants. But there's really, as I think I pointed out earlier, very little state or federal money to do the cleanup of these sites. So we're doing a pretty good job of reaching our targets for figuring out how bad the problem is, but there's really no guarantee that we can do much about it. For example, in 2004, we had identified a total of 150 sites, and as you can see from the data, we had done assessments on 95 of those. So we're on target for doing the assessments, but we're thinking of really reevaluating this measure, because how valuable is it going to be to continue to assess this problem if there really isn't going to be very much we can do about it, particularly for the orphan sites. Some of these we may find some responsible parties and we can move to cleanup, but we'll probably be looking at whether or not this is really a good measure to continue.
Stephanie, the assessment involves what? Someone going out on site and you do a certain amount of testing and that type of thing, I would assume, so you understand how big the problem is at each site?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, in trying to find any old data, old files, old records about the sites. Obviously, they're old mining practices. So it's a combination of records review, trying to figure out what actually happened there and actual work on site. And some are worse than others.
Well, are you pretty confident you've assessed all the sites? Or you're going to have this. I mean, you're at, what, 75%, and you're projecting?
We actually didn't do it by percentage, Mr. Chairman. We did it by numbers. We've identified 150 total so far. And we may find some others, or they may be reported to us. We're pretty confident that's the entire universe. And of those, we've assessed 95.
Well, What type of if you got rid of this performance measure, would it be worthwhile to, because you have such little money to achieve this, would it be worthwhile for you to institute a measure of cleanups on contaminated abandoned mine sites?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's precisely the dilemma that we're going to wrestle with, because as a practical matter, I don't know how much cleanup is really going to be able to be done. We might be able to have a measure that reflects cleanup where there is somebody who has money to pay for it, but for the ones where there is no money, I think we have to figure out something else. Perhaps some kind of hierarchy, some sites are worse than others, and is there something that can be done on the most where the most egregious problems are, that kind of thing. But just continuing to measure our effectiveness and doing assessments doesn't seem to really get at the issue.
Representative Krieger.
The location of those sites, whether they're close to streams or whether water is leaching out into streams, are you looking at those sites as more serious and need to be dealt with, with preference to some other site that's got the same condition but you haven't got water values to deal with?
Chairman, Representative Krieger, absolutely. Yes, that would be one of the criteria that we would look at.
Well, we have a bond program that has been utilized in the past for orphan sites. How many of these, two questions for you. How many of these abandoned mine sites are creating higher level problems, however you want to define it, where you have to move them up into a prioritized state? And secondly, the status of the orphan site program as it is today, how would that play into being able to really get at the worst of these sites? Some of these sites that may be the worst, again, you have to do the research, you have to, because they're abandoned. So who owns them? Who's responsible for it? Who can you go after to recover? And that's why we have the orphan site problem. So how many of these really bad sites would qualify under the orphan site program?
Representative Krupp, I think what would be best, quite frankly, is if you would let us give you a breakdown report on the status of all of them. I don't know off the top of my head how many, but in response to the other part, that one, for example, that comes readily to mind is Formosa Mine. I don't know if you've heard about
it
or not. So there are certainly are some that are worse than others, and we can get you the detailed breakdown of which ones those are and how much money has been expended and how much money there might be to be expended. Ultimately, it's possible for one of the dilemmas, I think, is because of the nature of the business, these are pretty remote. And so unlike Portland Harbor, where you make a case in terms of a federal Superfund cleanup, you're in the middle of a populated area, there are people pulling fish out of the river, whatever, the degree to which the federal government might be willing to step in and help on the cleanups of any of these is really questionable. And I mentioned to you when I spoke to you on Thursday that the federal Superfund is declining as well. So This is a problem not only for Oregon. There is a fund, and I would have to do a little bit of research or have my staff do it. There is a fund for the cleanup of coal mines that, particularly in Montana, they get a whole pile of money, federal money for that. Now, the potential to extrapolate and expand that to other kinds of cleanups, because these, of course, are not. These are like old gold mining and silver mining and that sort of thing that we had in Oregon. That maybe is another, it's a completely different pot of federal money, and I'd have to find out what it is. But that's another possibility if the Superfund is not something, or if our own state bonding. But I'll get you the specifics on how much money is available and how severe the specific sites are.
Well, it is an area that concerns many of us who have rural districts, because that's where these mines are. And I know that the chair specifically has a number of abandoned mine sites in her area, and I do too. And I am concerned about this to the point that I guess I need to understand how big of a problem it really is, because the orphan site bond program doesn't look very healthy right now. And we, as a legislative body, probably need to address that if it's necessary for us to do so. And if this is a problem that continues to fester and it is creating issues out in the community, then we need to know that so that we, as a body, can make decisions if we want to try to restore that funding for that through the bonding program, make that happen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the Willamette sub-basin, or the Willamette Basin, as you correctly point out, southwestern Oregon, there are a lot of these abandoned mines. I believe that's where Formosa Mine is. And the other dilemma, of course, is if you have these substances leaching in toward the headwaters of the river, and then when you get downriver and you're trying to do cleanup and figure out where the source of the contamination is, and you're not able to stop the contamination that's coming in upstream, it really sort of makes it a challenge to clean it up further downstream. So.
Senator Nelson, you're looking bemused.
Senator Shields.
I'm
challenging his mental capacity.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I'll watch the children this way.
Thank you, Senator.
I'm going to cave in over here.
Oh, I see.
We're behaving over here.
You were talking about minds, and he was just not in the right vein.
Minds, not minds. Please continue. We've digressed into sophomore humor enough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will finish up with our performance measures, if I may. Performance measure number 14 on page 32 and number 15 on page 34 are directly targeted at customer service. Measure number 14 shows that more and more Oregonians are getting information from our website. We had over 300,000 hits per month in 2003 and over 450,000 in 2004. And this measure simply reports the raw number of web hits per month. And we, on this one as well, we want to develop some new measures that will actually evaluate the quality and the utility of our website. And one of the obvious ways to do that is some kind of exit polling from the people who use it, simply asking them what they looked at and if they found it useful or not. But we definitely had a lot of interest in it, and we're pleased to see that.
Director, we've had some discussion on this particular performance measure, and what we're thinking is that a better measure of this might be something along the lines of the percentage of ERT projects that DEQ is involved with that are completed on time. Okay. It would seem because when you're just saying the percentage of ERT projects with environmental issues that require significant DEQ involvement, that gives us a sense of how busy you are. But what we want to know, and the real effective measure, is what are we getting done, and how are we completing these on time? How many are we completing? Is there a timeline? Those are the kind of questions that we're really interested in getting at with this, because this really is a key performance measure in my mind, and I know the co-chairs have looked at this also and feel that this is one that could be further defined that helps us really measure agency performance.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that is, for us, measure number 15, and that's a very good suggestion, and whether it would be an overall project timeline and our place in it or our own timelines for our permits or whatever, I understand what you're asking for. It's a good suggestion. And these, for those of you not familiar, these are the economic revitalization teams that were the community solution teams that we're now part of.
What are you laughing about?
Because I didn't catch that, and the poor staffers needs to know what ERT means.
Oh.
So thank you, Steve.
I have, Mr. Chairman, I have that note.
Here. That's actually for another committee, okay? I play fast and loose with the rules. I'm just kidding.
We've been told that.
Yes. All right. Members, any additional comments on the performance measures?
Yes, sir.
We'll start with Representative Schaffler and then Senator Nelson.
Actually, Representative Krieger pointed it out to me. These are the hits on your webpage, 10,000 a day. Who's looking all that stuff up?
Who are these people?
That's a lot of people.
Fish.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Shoffley, that's one of the reasons I think we need a better measure, is so we could answer that question. I mean, we don't really have any qualitative data about who's using it, and why they're using it, and if it's helpful to them. We just
maybe somebody just got lost.
So that is a great question, Representative, and we need a lot better measure on that, because it's great to have websites, and we're spending a lot of money on e-government in this state. I want to know what we're getting out of all that money that we're spending for e-government, and this is a really good measure that we need to understand. Who's using it, and are they really finding what they need? Or is there a certain percentage of those people that still have to call you and talk to somebody because they haven't quite gotten the information that they need off the website? Those are things you need along with us. Senator Nelson.
Thank you. I just, when you're talking about the economic revitalization, the person in our district, Jerry Hammond, just does a great job. And I think I probably mentioned this before. Most of those folks work together. She's in the community. The one that we have the trouble with is the DLCD, what is it, Department of Land Conservation. Because that head office is based in Bend, and for everybody's information, it's actually closer for me. I'm closer to Senator Frank Shields in distance than I am to Senator Ben Westland in Bend. So, I mean, when people think about Eastern Oregon, it's just in one spot. I mean, the team up there really does a good job. They work together to take care of a lot of environmental issues. It helps me out. The second thing, I just, you know, we sort of beat each other up on this thing, but isn't it true that the United States in general and Oregon has better air, better water than they have in years and years and years? Would that be a fair statement?
Senator Nelson, members of the committee, I think that would be a fair statement.
Yeah. We're actually doing a pretty decent job when it comes right down.
We are, Senator Nelson. I think one of the things that I mentioned in my overview is that the challenges change, and we were discussing mercury a minute ago, and generally in cleaning up, like, sewage in the rivers and stuff like that on the Willamette, we've done a terrific job. But now we have new challenges. We have toxics. We have the pharmaceuticals. And they take different technology and different kinds of monitoring. But as a general statement, and as I pointed out in my overview, we're in attainment with all national air quality standards. And that's a real victory and a compliment to the people of Oregon who've done that.
So you're talking about mercury. Mercury occurs naturally in the environment. How do you handle that? Am I going down the wrong path there?
Senator Nelson, you're absolutely correct. And when the calculations are done for setting standards, there's actually an attribution for background for many of the things that we assess.
Yeah, I guess one more.
Yes.
I just have to do this, but there's a place for mining issue out there. Is that included in any of these standards, or where is that sitting at the moment?
Senator Nelson, that particular issue is not specific to the performance standards. That is a water permitting issue for the activity of placer mining or suction dredge mining. That's a permit that has been out on notice, and that we've had many, many conversations with several legislators and also with folks in the mining community. The public notice for the permit has been extended until March 4th at the request of the mining community. And then we'll be taking those comments, and we've made some revisions all along as a result, and hopefully we'll be able to accommodate the rest of the concerns once the public comment closes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Hearing nothing else. I'm sorry.
And if you've covered this, I was at a leadership meeting, couldn't break out. You've covered this already. I'll take it up later. But I'd like to go back to percentage of wastewater discharge permits issued within the target period. I think it's 10B. It's on the back page of this now.
Oh, that'd be the measure. That's measure number 4. It's also Oregon benchmark number 10.
Okay. But it's performance measure number 4. Uh-huh. You know which one I'm referring to?
Yes.
Okay. You know, I had a short conversation. It just triggered more in my mind afterwards. It was after committee meeting. If I'm correct, your target days on this is when someone asked for a discharge permit, is the target is 270 days, which struck me as kind of long, but not necessarily so, because I'm not sure what you do with that. But your actual time now is, depending on the project, is somewhat longer. What is your average time right now? I know you're working to bring that down.
Senator Bates, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Holly Schroeder, the Water Administrator, to come up because I don't know the specifics of what we're running now. We did have a lengthy discussion about the backlog and how we're trying to improve that, but I don't think we talked about this specifically.
I don't think we talked specifically about the days involved, and I want to kind of get a feel for that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, again for the record, Holly Schroeder, Water Quality Administrator. The target timeline on Measure 4 is 270 days, and the way that we receive renewal applications for permits, is they have to submit their renewal application no fewer than 180 days prior to expiration of the existing permit. So the 270 days is to try to return those out shortly after their expiration period is the target there. As you can see in performance measure 8, we are running a backlog, and actually if you look at our individual permit backlog, the performance measure 8 is the total universe of permits, and our individual permit backlog is actually a little bit higher than the 10% or so or 14% that's reported in measure 8, and that is because we do have several permits that have been expired for some period of time. We had a significant effort over 03 and 04 to try to reduce that backlog, and we cut the backlog in half. And I would say that for the majority of permits, and I can get exact, I can try to get some exact numbers, that we would have permits that might be expired for a number of months, up to a year. But at the same time, we definitely have had some permits that have been expired, frankly, for more than a year or a couple of years. When during our effort to reduce the backlog, we had one permit that had been expired for something like 8 years that we finally renewed. So there's quite a range that we have been dealing with in trying to reduce that backlog.
Fellow Mr. Chair. So what does it really mean for the person that wants to get a permit renewed? Or even a new permit. I mean, do they just continue on what they're doing and wait for you to say yay or nay, and you have to see what they're doing as far as discharge is concerned and apply any new standards? I mean, what are we talking about? I mean, it seems kind of strange running a department that has potentially someone out there 5-6 years without reissuing a permit, or are you asking for 180 days before it runs out, and you know you're at least 270 days out, so everyone's going to be running whatever they're doing without a permit. So I don't quite understand what's going on here.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Bates, let me take the two parts of your question. First, on new permits, we have a general policy where if somebody comes in for a new application, we immediately process that permit. Somebody cannot begin to discharge until they have that permit. And so we work with them because we recognize that that's an important factor in businesses that want to start up and begin operations. On the renewal side of the equation, what the Clean Water Act specifies is that if you submit your renewal application within that or before, prior to that 180 timeline that I alluded to, that if your permit is not renewed in a timely manner, it's what's called administratively extended. And so in practice, you're exactly right, that they continue to operate under the guidelines of the existing permit. So those existing conditions remain in force. What, of course, doesn't happen when that occurs is that if there are any changes that they want to make to their operations, or if there are any changes in water quality standards that need to get incorporated to update them, is that those activities get delayed. And so new standards do not necessarily get incorporated in as timely a manner as if we were keeping the permit current, which is one of the reasons why we convened the advisory committee that Director Halleck has spoken about in order to try to figure out how do we get this program running so that they have a low backlog and that we're turning over the permits in a timely manner.
Last question, and we'll take the whole committee's time up here. How long does it take to get a new permit issued on an average for a new business starting up? And then I like to have a longer talk about this outside of committee, because this strikes me as something that's not quite kosher.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I'd be happy to have a longer conversation. As far as a new source goes, I think it depends a little bit on the type of source that it is. Director Halleck spoke about a permitting mechanism we use called general permits, where people basically are assigned to a set of conditions. That is a very speedy process for somebody to get coverage under that, a new operation to get coverage under that. A brand new individual discharge into surface waters can be a very difficult process, and it frankly doesn't happen very often. I think we've had Port Westward and
Blue Heron.
Maybe we've had just a couple, I would say, in the past 5 years or so. And it can be a very timely process and may take a year to 18 months in order to work through that, especially if the load has already been allocated and we have to figure out how to accommodate that load into the stream.
Thank you.
In some places that can be a job killer.
Yeah, and what I'm concerned about, Mr. Chair, is that we want benchmarks. From my point of view, they're quickly and easily understandable. You can look at and see what's going on. This benchmark didn't tell me any of the information I really needed. It was just about useless. And yet we apparently have a significant problem that the agency is working on. And so it bothers me that we get these kind of benchmarks that, to me, kind of gloss over what's happening, and we don't have a clear understanding of what's going on. If I hadn't asked what's your usual time, I was kind of stunned to find it was 270 days. It just doesn't seem right to me. Either you get the job done or you don't. If it's simple stuff, you get done. If it's more prolonged and more difficult, you have to be careful. You have to study and measure that something else. But none of that was in this report, so it didn't help me any. And so it's a problem from my point of view of how we report benchmarks so we can really understand if there's a problem or not. And I'm more interested in the process here than actual facts almost.
Well, Senator, great point. As a matter of fact, and that's why we're engaging in the process that we are, which is most unusual for us, in that we are advising the agencies on performance measures and how we'd like to see those performance measures operate, what kind of information they give to us. And that's why we have the opportunity to look at these and make comments today, and hopefully we'll be able to directly address the agency to make those changes for us so that in 2 years when we come back, the agency can have the information that we want and we can look at that measure and get a sense of how they're doing, which is the whole reason we put performance measures in place. In regards to the timing, do take that to heart, because that's important that the backlog is a significant issue, and I understand Senator Bates' concern about that. Being able to operate with the same permit that you have is, for a time, is typically okay, unless there are new standards that have been put in place, unless you have changes in your processes that have as someone who is a permittee. All of those things are very, very important, and reducing that backlog through whatever means that we can achieve that is both, I know, your goal, and it certainly is for us, too, because it means customer service to the people that we serve as representatives and senators. Any additional comments, members? All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate it very much.
What I'd like to do now is move on to the program priority discussion, and we have, please don't pay any attention to those horrible spreadsheets that are in your binder.
Can we throw them away?
You may recycle them, please, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Can we recycle them?
And we have some easier to read, larger, easier to handle spreadsheets to go over with you today.
Bigger is better?
Well, more readable, Mr. Chairman.
I know it's Valentine's Day. Be careful.
Well, look, Senator. Wow. That is more.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, let me just explain. I'm only going to be, in this first part of my presentation, I'm only talking about the first three pages of what was just handed out to you. The first three pages are the department-wide priority list of 18 programs. The rest of the attached pages are simply broken out by program, and they're there for your reference. But my intent is to first walk through the 18 priorities, and then we will follow with another handout that shows the 10% reductions. So what I'd like to share with you first is what criteria we use to make the decisions about what order you see for this list. First of all, protection of public health and safety. Secondly, to fulfill federal mandates for which we have delegation from the U.S. EPA, which covers much of our water quality, air quality, and land quality work. Then programs that address pollution from many small sources, automobiles, wood stoves, that sort of thing. Then programs that provide incentives and support for economic growth.
And finally, services that could be provided by others. And so that's how we listed these 18 that you see. And I'm going to walk through them briefly and happy to respond to questions before we move on to the cuts discussion.
Outstanding. Thank you. And thanks for providing us with a bigger, more readable document.
You're most welcome, and thanks to Mr. Siebert for that instruction. The first three priorities that support the governor's safety and health principles, and they protect public safety and also healthy drinking water. And these three priorities are to oversee the destruction of chemical weapons stored at the Umatilla Army Depot. Secondly, to respond to emergency spills and other chemical threats. And third, to protect drinking water sources, primarily groundwater. The second group of priorities supports the governor's livability principle and our strategic direction to protect Oregon's water. This group of priorities also keeps delegation of federal Clean Water Act work in Oregon. And as someone mentioned earlier, if we don't do this work, US EPA would do it. These priorities are to develop clean water plans to reduce pollution from all sources, sometimes referred to as TMDLs, to set clean water standards, to monitor the quality of Oregon's water, and then to issue water quality permits to protect Oregon's water. That takes us up to priorities 8, 9, and 10. These reflect the governor's commitment to fulfill mandates and our commitment to stakeholders to maintain delegation of all federal programs, not just water. These priorities reflect our base work with permitted sources in hazardous waste, air, and underground tanks. In these programs, as in our base water work, it's important to recognize that federal funds cannot be used to do other work, and if we turn back federal funds to US EPA, they will simply be given to other states. It's also important to recognize that stakeholders have made a significant investment to have the state run these base regulatory programs. 66% of DEQ's budget is funded by fee payers. Priorities 11, 12, and 13 address where most of the air and water pollution in Oregon comes from. Cars, runoff, small sources, and the activities, quite frankly, of you and me. These programs offer a combination of regulation and incentives to maintain environmental gains. They include air quality monitoring of toxics and other area-wide pollutants, such as particulate, the vehicle inspection program, pass-through of federal grants to communities for watershed improvement projects, and clean water certification of some smaller removal fill projects. Priorities 14, 15, and 16 are incentives and support for economic growth. Priority 14 is to administer the State Revolving Loan Fund, which we've discussed before, to help communities upgrade their sewage treatment plants. Priority 15 provides tax credits for investment in pollution control. Priority 16 benefits economic development by cleaning up contaminated sites. And finally, priorities 17, solid waste and recycling, and priority 18, the septic system program, are programs that are now delivered in part by local government, although DEQ would probably need to retain some regulatory authority in solid waste since part of that program comes from federal law. With funding, local governments could take on more of the state's role, such as collection and safe disposal of household hazardous waste and promotion of recycling. In the septic program, almost half of the counties run it on behalf of the state now. If funding and staffing challenges could be addressed, the rest of the counties might be persuaded to take the program. And that is the very brief run-through of the priorities, and I'd be happy to answer any questions before we get to the handout on the 10% reduction.
Very good. Masterfully done. Senator, did you have a... Senator Shields, did you have... Okay.
Well, I have a couple of questions for you.
In going back to page one, just curious to understand your thinking, thought process, not trying to split hairs, but... measures, or rather programs number 5 and 6, Number five is developing clean water standards as benchmarks. Number six is monitoring rivers, lakes, streams, and so forth. I'm almost thinking that number six should be higher on the prioritized list. It should fall below TMDLs because they're, in essence, they're essentially achieving the same purpose. The activity is you develop and clean out, or you develop and carry out the clean water plans for TMDLs, and part of that is accomplished through monitoring. Is it absolutely necessary for you to develop the clean water standards, and that has a higher ranking as it does the monitoring?
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking to myself this morning, the easy part of this list is the beginning and the end. The part in the middle is the hardest. I'll explain to you my logic for the water one, and admittedly, it's debatable. The TMDL one, item number four, was put first in the water list because we're under consent decree court order to complete the TMDLs primarily. In terms of the logic of setting standards and monitoring and permitting, my logic was you set the standards because you need the goalposts to know where you're going. You monitor the water to tell how you're doing, and you issue the permits as the tools to control the discharges. Now, admittedly, you, Mr. Chairman, or probably anybody else on the committee could come up with some other defensible argument for that order, but that was my logic for it.
It is rational logic, commonsensical from my viewpoint. The question I would have is, once you've set the standards, they're set. And unless you're constantly resetting standards, which I wouldn't think you would be doing, then you've set the standard, you've achieved that goal. And I would think monitoring, which is an ongoing activity, whereas setting standards wouldn't be, would then move monitoring up to a higher level of in the hierarchy of what you need to accomplish. Does that sound rational?
Mr. Chairman, I understand your point. Actually, water quality standards can be and are supposed to be revisited every 3 years in a process called triennial review of water quality standards. So there is that question of the actual rethinking and relooking at standards. There are also standards that we have five staff currently who do standards work, and there are standards that we have yet to do. Turbidity is one. There may be others that don't come right to mind, but I can get that for you. So we have ongoing standards work. It is work that is given to us by US EPA. It is part of the federally delegated program. But what you said about monitoring is also absolutely correct. I mean, without monitoring, we do not know how we're doing. And we do not know if the standards we've set are correct, or if the total maximum daily loads are working, or if the permits are working. So you're absolutely right. It's very tough to make the call between which of those activities is most important.
Okay. Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, on the money you're talking about sending back to the federal government, do we have to come up with some of our own funding out of our general fund before they'll give us that money, or is that if we have a general fund amount, other fund, federal fund, if we reduce the general fund, our part of the funding, would that in kind reduce what the federal government did?
Representative Schaffler, members of the committee, in general, what you just described is a true statement for agencies that have a lot of general fund and also receive federal fund. One of the interesting things about our agency is because we are 66% fee funded, we can make up our match out of fee revenue. And we, in looking at our 10% reduction list, which we'll go over in a moment, and I may have mentioned this to you, obviously we want to make our best case, and so I'm thinking to myself, am I going to be able to say to this committee that if we take these cuts in general fund, we have to give programs back to the federal government? I cannot say that because we do not have enough general fund in our agency that if it's cut, it is going to force us to return a program, because we have fee revenue, and that's reality. It's not to say it's a good thing. And I certainly am not advocating for cutting any more of our general fund, but we can make our match with the fees that we get from the regulated community.
Oh, may I?
Sure.
Then if that's the case, then wouldn't, and we're so tight with money, wouldn't we be smart to only cut where we are using general fund? So, because that's what we're going to match it with our fee money anyway, to keep the federal dollars and not mess around with anything that is being covered, a match being covered by other funds or fee funds. Am I making myself clear here?
I think so, Representative Schaffler and members of the committee. When we get to the reduction list, we were requested to show you where we would take reductions in all funds, but I do intend to just highlight the discussion of the general fund and lottery fund dollars today unless you have specific questions about the other funds.
And I have one more question, please. I think I found one example in here where, you know, your first part of this, you have one column with your 10% reduction, and then the second part, I think you break it down. But did they all match in here? Were they all? I think I found one where I think it was 11-2, Department 11 Program Division 11 Department, and it said 950,000. And then I went over to the second part, and it didn't add up to that. Is that an anomaly? Have you been fixed in the new one?
I think it has been fixed.
Representative Schaffler, hopefully it was an anomaly. These were all generated by a computer program that in theory carries the same set of numbers over one form to the other, and hopefully they were addressed in the new handout. But when we get to that one, please call out for me if it's not been fixed.
Okay. I think it has.
Okay. I hope so.
Yes. Senator Nelson.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. A question on the conflict I see in all this. But you have to deal with as an agency, you know. Like on page 3 of this little box at the very bottom, the point number 4, programs to provide incentives to support for economic growth. And talking about, as the chair was talking about, the water quality, if you're going to have growth, you're going to have enough water in order to support it. And it seems like all the priorities and the things you've got going here is you don't really talk about economic growth. And, you know, for instance, in my area, Hermiston, they have a critical groundwater area. If they're ever going to grow or do anything, they're going to have to use water out of the Columbia River. I don't see any benchmarks or standards or anything that help develop that. I mean, we're talking about economic development out here, but I don't see anything in these priority lists that actually say, well, this is one of our functions, because it's all related. If we want good schools, good health care, good public safety, we're going to have growth. We're going to have water. And what is your agency, or how do you address it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, a couple of answers to that. First of all, it is our hope that our performance measure having to do with reuse of reclaimed wastewater will help, because that actually, if it's successful, means that water will no longer just be, if you will, thrown away. It will actually be reclaimed, and we can use it for some other things that will help, particularly in areas where there's not much water. Secondly, I don't know the details, but I do know that our sister agency, the Oregon Water Resources Department, is very much involved with issues of water quantity everywhere, obviously. Our agency generally doesn't deal with water quantity except where we get in partnership with other agencies to talk about it. And in Morrow County, for example, we have been a part of a group that is meeting with the Morrow County water users who are trying to get ahead of this issue of growth for the next 50 years, and they've been talking with several agencies about how they might do that. And I think Water Resources is involved in a joint effort with Morrow and Umatilla counties looking at that issue. So they generally look at water quantity more than we do, but we get involved wherever we might be part of that. Trying to keep groundwater clean, obviously, is important. And as I said, water reuse were probably two areas where we can contribute.
Well, it just seems to me like the agencies, you're looking at quality, they're looking at quantity. How do we resolve it? You don't have to answer that, but that's the question in my mind, is that it seems to me the agencies are kind of working across purposes of each other. And how do you communicate between each other to solve all those problems?
Well, Senator Nelson, we do try and communicate with one another, and I think in natural resources we do a pretty good job of that. We get together as a natural resources cabinet of directors every couple weeks, bring to the table with the governor's office common issues. Governor's office is very good about pulling us together when we need to be talking to each other and we're not. And I would encourage you to do that as well. So,
well, we will. actually, Senator Nelson, you bring up a great point. We've probably all experienced this to some extent, where I had a situation some years ago up on the North San Diego, where a company that makes windows wanted to locate up the canyon in an abandoned mill site. They needed a discharge permit, couldn't get it. You know, to create windows, you got to wash them. You got to have water that you use and you put back in the river. And they couldn't because the water is allocated in terms of the pollutant load at that point in time. And that will, of course, state this where City of Salem gets all its water from that comes through this canal system. So we lost those jobs, those opportunities for those jobs in one of the timber towns that I represent that has had most of its mills shut down because of these kinds of issues. And it is something that has to be thought through, I think, in a different way. And I think it ought to be thought through from the perspective of, you know, how can we not only meet clean water standards and at the same time create economic growth. We can't concentrate all of our growth in certain areas just because they have water available. There's other places in Oregon people want to live where there actually is water available, but for various reasons we can't seem to get it done. And this is something that I think has to change. It just has to somehow. Somehow we've got to find a way around this. And I'm convinced that we can if we think creatively enough and work with people. To get those things done, Representative Trump.
Thank you. And, you know, when the state of Washington is using almost 10 times more water out of Columbia we are, I can't believe there isn't a large quantity of high-quality water that we could drag out of that river and use in your neighborhood. That's my opinion. Thank you very much. But
I like that.
Opinion well taken. Question on further priorities, Stephanie. On number 12, vehicles are the number one source of air pollution, according to your narrative here. It would seem to me, then, if they are the number one source of air pollution, according to your statement, that you would actually have them ranked a little bit higher up the scale because they are the number one source. Why did you put it down where it is?
Mr. Chairman, for 11, 12, and 13, it's really a question that applies to all three of those because my sort of umbrella comment for all of those that this is where most of the pollution comes from in Oregon. And quite frankly, the difference in ranking was to adhere to the governor's desire to fulfill mandates because the program activities that are listed higher up on the list, as I mentioned, are delegated federal programs and mandated. These programs, vehicle inspection, for example, is part of, we have to submit plans to the US EPA and AIR that says how we will meet air quality standards. And part of the approved plans we have now say that in the metropolitan Portland area and in the Medford area, to achieve air standards, we will implement a vehicle inspection program. We could go back, if we could figure out another way that is as effective as the vehicle inspection program to meet air standards, we could, in fact, go back to EPA and say, we are submitting this as an alternative, and we wouldn't have to do the vehicle inspection program. But the logic of why this group is here and this other group is ahead of it is really the federal mandate logic.
Well, but it would seem to me, Stephanie, that they're all federal mandates.
They are, Mr. Chair, in that we have to achieve the standards. These, if you will, get more at some of the tools that you can use to get at the smaller sources that are not necessarily regulated by a permit. A permit is sort of the traditional tool that we have to regulate a source. These small sources, wood stoves or cars or whatever it is, we have to have different strategies. And so in water, for example, you've heard of the 319 grant program for non-point sources. So we try and give grants to help with non-point source water pollution. When we were dealing with air pollution in Medford some years ago, we had a wood stove buyout program. So that the you still have to get to achieving the standard, and it's our obligation to figure out how we're going to do it. So if we don't use these things that you see on this list, we would have to figure out something else that was just as effective so that we can stay in attainment with the standards.
Well, I appreciate your explanation. I don't agree with it, for lack of a better term,
fair enough,
to share that with you, just because it is... if vehicles are your number one source of air pollution, and I understand what you're talking about, it's the difference between point source pollution, non-point source pollution, large discharges into the environment that are very visible in high volume. That is one issue compared to millions of cars or hundreds of thousands of cars running around the state. But again, it seems to me that while these may be smaller sources, that, and to quote you, those smaller sources in their aggregate form are the number one source of air pollution in the state. And that would seem to me, if that's the case, then that ought to be where your focus is, and that would seem to me that you would want to rank that higher.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't... disagree with what you're saying, but again, these, like I said, the easy part was the first part of the list and the last part, and the part in the middle is more challenging. And in this case, I ranked the federal mandate higher than these, but you can certainly make an argument for doing it the other way. I don't dispute you at all.
All right. Yes, Representative Shaw.
Thank you. I'm trying to figure this all out, so you're just going to have to bear with me. So on number 12, even though there's no general fund in there, if we went exactly by this plan, we would reduce this by $3,600,000-some, even though there's, isn't there a whole thought behind this reduction just to try and find savings in the general fund so we can spend more money on education, health care, and safety?
Paul.
Isn't that what we're doing here?
Hey, Paul has a good answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffner, the column you see where it says 10% reduction of GRB, mm-hmm. That's just a total funds that are on their 10% cut list as possible cuts, and that's really there as more of a informative item so that you can look and see if, for example, they have a number one priority program, but they're offering up a cut in that number one priority. You might wonder why, if it's number one, that's a place that they would go to a 10% cut. You'll be getting a more detailed list from the agency on exactly what the proposed cuts are.
Okay.
And again, just to clarify on the 10% reductions, the agency, all agencies are required by a law passed by this body a couple of biennia ago to identify reductions for all fund types. And so we have asked that those same cuts be rolled over into the list that you'll see. What's a little bit different is in the past, the agencies only are to identify 10% of like an agency request budget number. And then the governor might take cuts off of that 10% general fund. You would normally just see what's left. Might be 2% left on that list. What we asked agencies to do is, in essence, refresh that list to give us enough. It's a full 10% of the governor's recommended budget on the general fund and lottery funds. We fully expect that's where you're going to be focusing your time. That's certainly where we focus our time.
Absolutely.
So then every agency, I hope, has been instructed to hang on to as much federal money as possible and cut anywhere else possible. I hope that's what your direction's been. Because that's just money sitting there. and I want us to keep as much of it as we can. That's layman's terms.
Well, Representative, I'm not sure they've had instructions to do that, but Senator Nelson, you have a comment?
Yeah, just going back to 12 again, and we discussed this last week about air pollution. Someplace in this book I was looking there. In 2002, the air quality actually was down substantially from last year because of forest fires. Now we're talking about this non-pollution source. I mean, it seems to me that we're doing a really pretty good job again, taking care of air. There's a lot of natural causes that affect what we're doing.
Senator Nelson, Mr. Chair, in that case, it would be two different pollutants, really.
Thank you.
This is what we talked about.
Right, right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please, Representative.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Actually, the senator had his hand up first.
No, go ahead.
All right.
Well, I defer to my
I guess I'm trying. Thank you, sir.
He is my representative.
My senator is very generous. I guess my question next is, then, if these aren't the proposed cuts, and it's a nice exercise, why aren't we just going straight directly to what the proposed cuts are? That's really when we should have started there instead of doing all this extra stuff. I'm not beating up on anybody.
I would think that
for every agency.
Stephanie right probably agrees with
yeah,
you,
I think she
actually.
Does. Forgive me, but I'm new to this. We're looking to be efficient. I think just going right straight to them.
Well, with the permission of the committee, we did hand out the 10% cut list. If we're ready to move to that, I'm happy to. Otherwise, I'm happy to continue.
Senator Shields, perhaps before we do that, since you have a question on priorities.
I got pulled out of committee by a bazillion people and didn't get to ask my question about underground tanks when you were talking about 10. I got pulled out of the room on the department-wide priorities. A simple question is, when you're talking about underground tanks, are you talking about the commercial tanks, or are you talking about local residential ones as well?
Senator Shields, Mr. Chairman, it's both.
Okay.
It's heating oil tanks, which are residential.
Home heating oil
yes.
tanks. I remember the statistics from 10 years ago or 6 or 7 years ago and how old many of them were, and a lot of home heating oil tanks had already outlived their life expectancy, and how there was like, I don't know, 100 gallon of oil left in a lot of tanks that were no longer used because families had converted to natural gas. I remember all that. And I remember one of the upshots was that if you wanted to talk about point source pollution, you know, 100 gallons here and 100 gallons there and 100 gallons somewhere else of fuel oil, if you have 100,000 tanks or whatever it's leaking, talk about sources all over the place and potential for disaster. Have we had an update on that situation lately brought anywhere before the legislature? I mean, I know how much I know 5 years ago.
I do not believe so, Senator Shields. We have an annual cleanup report that we do the legislature. There may be data in there, and I'll check and see if there is. If not, I'll get it for you.
Mr. Chair, I just would like to ask the committee to just listen for 1 minute, because when we got into this, I think it was back when I was in the House, which has been a while, it was amazing how many home heating oil tanks in this state had just been abandoned. We did pass real estate law that you can't sell a house. Senator Nelson couldn't sell his house if he had an underground oil tank in the backyard without remediating that as part of the real estate sale, and that slowly gets to the problem. But how many of those have begun to leak in the last 10 years while we're in that process? What's the effect of that? I mean, I think when we tallied it up, there were several hundred thousand gallons of oil potentially able to leak into, you know, our water systems. And talking about a pollution hazard, you know, and I don't think we've had an update on that lately, or at least I don't. Maybe those who are in the House have heard something, or Senator Bates just left the House, you know, recently. Maybe you've heard more on your side of the building than
I have. Senator. Is it possible that that's something that you can provide for the
Absolutely.
Committee shortly?
Absolutely.
Well, no, it's a great point, Senator.
Thank you for the indulgence. This is something I don't think we've heard much about lately, and something that I know the only time I hear about it is when somebody wants to sell a piece of real estate property and they're surprised to find that they've got a buried tank in the backyard and ticked off because it costs them a bunch of money to get it out of the ground and remediate it, or they will come in and go into that tank and empty it and fill it with sand or something like that. But it costs money, you know? And yet the consequence of not doing anything, it's amazing how much you can pollute under a house in a residential or out in the country, you know, area. So thank you for the indulgence.
I'm happy to do that.
Very good. All right. If there are no further questions, let's move, Stephanie, to the 10% reduction.
All right. I'll just share with you the criteria that we use to select the reductions that are on here.
And Stephanie, before you get started, these are from the top to the bottom, these are the reductions you would anticipate making first. The ones here, number 18 would be your first one, and your least desirable reduction would be number one.
That's correct.
Okay, well, I just wanted to clarify that.
Hopefully on your list, the general fund and lottery fund items are highlighted in yellow.
They
and
are.
Those were the ones that I was going to focus on.
Thank you.
And again, we would hope that if we have to take these reductions, which of course we hope we won't have to take at all, but if we do, that these would be things that would cause the least harm to the environment, given some tough choices, that we would maintain our strategic directions and reflect the governor's priorities, that we would cause the least harm to service delivery, and again, that we would maintain delegation of federal programs. And I shared with you one of the things we thought about when we were doing this earlier, which is whether or not we would be sending whole programs back to the federal government. And that is not the case because of our heavy fee base. We also, within programs, face the decision of do you cut entire programs or do you reduce work in several programs. And basically, we ended up identifying reductions in all three of our main programs, water, air, and land. And as I mentioned earlier, cutting the general fund does not cut a whole program in any of these. We also tried, I've said in my presentation before, that much of our general fund, the 11% that we do have, goes to technical assistance, also goes to complaint response, business assistance. We tried to hang on to some of that for those activities to support our work with small business, small communities, and individual Oregonians. And I'd like to, if I could, just walk through the general fund, lottery fund highlighted reductions on here and then answer any questions you may have after that. The first one, item number 16 on page 10, this would be a one-time fund shift of general fund debt service in our bonding for orphan site cleanup. For the 0507 biennium only, we would shift the debt service payment to the hazardous substance fee collected by the state fire marshal, where we have a fund balance in part because of the bond refinancing we did that I discussed with you as an efficiency member, so that we do have enough money to make this shift for one time. And so that would be the first proposal that would come from general fund on this list.
That affects, of course, the very issue that we talked about earlier in terms of orphan sites. Now, help me understand how that would work. Now, currently, we're using the general fund to pay for the debt service on the bond for orphan site, correct?
That's correct. These are some bonds that were sold historically.
Patty. Okay, so if we change from general funds to using other funds, that fee, the bond, the payment on the bond still gets made.
That's
for
correct.
Orphan site. However, that takes money away from some other fund that you could utilize for a number of purposes, correct? Is that my understanding?
That's correct, Mr. Chair, except that other fund is also specified for very narrow purposes, one of which is cleanup, the hazardous substance.
So you're actually taking money that would be used to do the cleanup and moving it to cover the the debt reduction. So you're cleaning up less toxic sites, Senator, our Representative Crump.
Doesn't get where you want to go.
Excuse me.
Now, Senator.
I wouldn't put thoughts in your
head. Is that your parting comment?
No.
Okay. Do you anticipate the hazardous cleanup assessment that the fire marshal administers, do you anticipate that growing in dollars this session? Is it pretty static?
No, Mr. Chairman, we do not. As I mentioned, the only reason we're even proposing this or able to propose it is there was a fund balance because some of the debt refinancing that we did and also our good money management, quite frankly, but we do not anticipate being able to carry this on into perpetuity, and also because in 1995 the legislature actually expressly said that you cannot use fees for ongoing debt service. So this really could only be a one-time thing.
Okay, thank you. Right, please continue.
Okay, if you move to the next page, page number 11, item number 11, this would be the next cut that we would take after the debt service fund shift. What we would do here is we would cut one out of three air monitoring stations in the metropolitan Portland area. That they basically measure toxic pollution such as diesel exhaust and benzene. And we would also have a staff reduction that does the data analysis from that monitoring effort.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Shields.
I want to get something straight here. We've jumped from the 16th down to the 11th item because we're just looking at general fund cuts.
That's correct, Senator Shields.
And yet the cuts are supposed to be across the board, right? Whether it's cuts in general funds, lottery funds, other funds, whatever. Is that right? Am I correct in that?
I believe so.
No.
No?
All Senator Bates says no.
No, that is correct.
From my understanding, and maybe I'm wrong from the co-chairs, we're trying to get a handle on potentially, first and foremost, general fund, you know, money that we can have some control of, general fund money. In this particular budget, a lot of your lottery money is probably tied up with ballot measure 66, constitutionally directed.
Senator Bates, we will get to the lottery fund. We only have it in one place. It's in the water program. You're correct.
My expectation is it's directed by the Constitution because of ballot measure 66. So, I mean, I guess I'm maybe thinking down the road, but we have to, if we find that our revenue forecast is lower than expected, we're trying to balance out multiple budgets, we're probably looking at that what we can affect, which is general fund money. In your particular case, it'd be lottery money in some other budgets potentially. So I'm not sure that what you said isn't correct, but a lot of this stuff cutting across federal funds and others is sort of an academic exercise. We're not really interested in doing that. We're interested in balancing out our general fund money and our lottery money that's accessible to us. So just from speaking for myself, I'm most focused on what is your general fund cuts in this particular budget. Is that
That's correct, Senator Bates, and that's why we laid them out the way we did.
Because if you look on the other one, you can see the overall 10% cuts. If you want to look at that, just sort of to get a sense for it. But this is where we really have to focus our attention. Since we have a limited amount of time, I don't want to spend time looking at academic federal fund cuts that aren't going to mean anything to us.
Well, but in reality, we're only discussing the general fund lottery.
Yeah, we are.
Right. So that's what I'm trying to answer.
We are, but I'm raising this issue because at the beginning of this set of meetings of the Ways and Means Natural Resources Sub, we were in here looking at cuts from agency budgets that didn't even have any general fund. And we were saying, why are we doing this? And so I'm just trying to get everything to line up and be consistent here. We were all saying it doesn't make any sense to cut things that aren't general fund anyway. And now it sounds like, I don't know, I'm having trouble understanding the apparent inconsistency in what we're doing.
Mr. Chair, before staff answers, I got
sure. All right, Representative Shoffer, go ahead.
Everybody else sounds as confused as I know I am. I'm going to jump up two lines to 13, the top of the page there. Why are we reducing $1.5 million of federal funds? Why are we doing that?
Paul, why don't you answer?
This has nothing. There's no other funds in here but federal funds. Yet, according to this, this is part of the 10% reduction in your budget. Am I correct? First of all, and then why are we doing that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shaffer, I'll try to answer you first. These are proposed cuts. They haven't been taken. So these are not reductions that are included in the governor's budget. This is an exercise. It may very well be an academic exercise, but it is an exercise that all agencies are required to go through by statute during budget development. We have carried that same exercise over into this process when we had agencies put these federal fund reductions on their reduction lists. And while I would personally agree that looking at federal fund reductions probably doesn't make a lot of sense, the one caveat I would maybe say for the other funds is in this agency it's a possibility. Certain in others that you see, like Department of Fish and Wildlife, another fund reduction could be taken in place of a general fund reduction, and then those freed up money, so to speak, would go to backfill some general fund and make some general fund available for the common good. So,
Mr. Chair, that forgive me, yes. That there is no general fund on this line. So why are we turning down $1.5 million?
We're not turning anything down. It's the law requires us to propose it.
Okay. All right.
If we don't like the law, we could always change it. But they're having to comply with just basically the law we passed.
Yes.
Senator Nelson.
Just along those lines, like in phase two, when we get to that point, I was looking in the back of this book, actually reading it under phase two on page 2-7, they have agency management budget of about $20 million. And if you go back to page 12 and of the general fund, there's about $20 million. I mean, I think that's what we're going to, is that at some point, you might just have to say, well, in your general fund, you're going to have to manage this with $2 million less. And under this thing, under your proposal here, it shows that you're actually producing or proposing about a $2.1 million reduction. And so, I mean, just from my simplified view, because this is complex to me, right, but I don't understand a lot of it, is that we might just have to say, well, take $2 million out of your general fund and make this thing work. I mean, we could get to that point. And that would be taking money out of your operations, I guess. And my sense in all these committees that I'm hearing is that nobody's really looking at taking money out of management or out of operations. It's always taking money out of programs on the street. And I think that, I mean, we're going to have to make that hard decision and say, you might have to make do and make these other things go, but we're going to take it out of your operation budget at the same level and keep these programs going out on the street.
Well, Senator, you bring up a good point. And Stephanie, I actually, after I had first looked at the cuts list some time ago, I'd actually written this question down. So since the Senator's approached it, I'll ask you. I don't see anything on the cuts list in regards to administration. I do see personnel reductions, FTE reductions, but they're programmatic in terms of individuals that are attached to that. So, response, please.
Mr. Chair, I would be happy to respond. And I'll, if you'll kind of walk with me, I'll tell you how you tell it. With the way we assess agency management costs is with an indirect rate, okay? So it doesn't show up as a general fund. It shows up as another fund. So, for example, to get to the $2 million that Senator Nelson is discussing, I'm walking through each of the items that would get you to the 2.1. In actuality, the cut that we would take if you took the full 2.1 would be more than 2.1 because you need to go to the other fund column. And, for example, for the cut I just articulated, the one item number 11 that shows $200,285 in general fund, that's the program portion of the cut. The agency management portion of the cut is the $15,842 that you see under other fund. So you would go to each one that I'm proposing, and if you'll go to the next page with me just for purposes of illustration, you'll see that almost every item on page 12, there is a general fund cut proposed. We have one in air quality permitting, one in hazardous waste, one in water quality permitting, and one in water quality monitoring. And you will see that the general fund dollars are highlighted for you. If you look in the other fund column, each one of those dollar figures would be the amount that would be cut in agency management. So when we get through this exercise with you and you decide what the total number of cuts are going to be, if there are going to be some, then there will be a proportional amount of what we call other fund, which is our indirect, that actually gets added to that, and that has to be taken out of our agency management overhead and positions defined that will be cut, et cetera. So it's a budget anomaly, but the money is there and the cut is there. It's just how it gets reflected.
Yes, certainly.
So the other fund represents how much your agency spends in managing the amount of money spent in general fund, meaning supervision, what's management mean, and agency management. And the three, like on page 12, number 9-1, the $325,000, that you're reducing two full-time employees. So that includes their wages and their benefits and all the materials they need to carry out that, whatever that is they're carrying out.
That's correct, Representative Schaffler. And to answer your first question, agency management is a category in our budget. If you remember the overview, this number you see under other fund that pays for that, it includes all the basic agency management services, human resources, budget, finance office, health and safety, and the office of the director. So in other words, we charge our programs a service charge for those functions.
So when we say other fund, it means agency management services?
In the cases that I'm articulating for you, we need to be careful when you're talking on these general fund items. Yes, it does. But you will get to other programs, vehicle inspection being one, and you'll see this giant number in other fund. That's because other fund also can mean fee revenue. So we have to be very careful what we're talking about. But in the examples I've just given you, yes, it means the overhead for agency management.
And Mr. Chair,
yes, please.
I have to get through this.
That's why we have this process.
When you all come to the top line of the $325,000 again, when you came to this number, did you and your staff go through? I mean, I'm a contractor. There are ways probably to do things more efficient than I do it. If I had somebody looking above me, did you all go through and figure out if you could do any of these things for less than this $325,000 before you put this number in here to be part of a 10% reduction? Am I articulating myself well enough there?
Representative Schaffler, Mr. Chairman, we looking for efficiencies is something that we do all the time. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is, for this exercise, we needed to identify 10% cuts in general and lottery dollars, irrespective of whatever efficiencies we might have taken. And the efficiencies, if you will, didn't count. And I will give you an example that I have actually shared with some of you before when I've talked to you individually. During this biennium, the efficient bond management I told you about, we actually saved $900,000 of general fund in our budget. It was removed from our budget. So that's the way the process works.
Just for the record, Ms. Halleck is the first one I've had to go through this with. All the other agencies will get off a lot easier, so don't. You're teaching me how to read all this stuff, and I appreciate that.
No problem, Representative Schaffler. I'm happy to do it.
Well, Representative, I appreciate the fact you're teachable.
Well, that I am. Got the sheepskin to prove it.
Yes. Senator Shields, I can see you want to make a comment.
Well, actually, I just want to clarify with Stephanie that every place where we see a yellow highlighted, except on the first page with the 487, which you've already explained to us, every other one of those general fund cuts that you highlighted in yellow has a corresponding one that we could highlight in green, and it actually represents somewhere around $300,000 in cuts that would be out of your administrative budget. You follow what I'm driving at? Some of the biggest ones aren't there because they don't have general fund ones beside them, the $3 million, $3.6 for vehicles, and so on. But so under other funds, you have already identified about $350,000 of administrative cuts.
That's correct, Senator Shields. And the only thing that I would say, just to be sure, in case we run out of time, that on the very last page, the item number 4 that's listed there is actually lottery fund cut. Everything else is general fund.
But that, yeah, okay. Would the 48 beside it be considered administrative?
Yes, it would.
Okay. Follow what I just did then? Everywhere I saw a yellow line, I marked it with my green marker of another fund that is administered. So there's over $300,000 of them, especially when you add in that $48,000.
Isn't it 11 million now?
No, it isn't. Because you've got huge ones that don't have a general fund cut beside them. The $4.8 million that...
Some of those go over to the third column, which says 11 million down at the bottom.
Yeah, I know. But only $350,000 of that is administrative.
All right, you two.
We're not fighting. I'm just. Listen, we got people on our side that are educable, too.
Ooh, okay. I see. All right.
Okay, any further questions for Stephanie on. Why don't you continue on with the individual reductions that you've highlighted? Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we talked about the one on page 11, which is the air quality area source and toxics. And then unless there are any more questions, I'd move to page 12, which has 4 items identified. The first on the list is air quality permitting. This is item number 9. I have to figure out where I am on my own thing. This fund supports staff who calculate permit emission limits, track permits to measure performance, and submit compliance reports to EPA. They also help businesses with permit applications, generate invoices, and respond to information requests. They're basically support for the permit writers. If we took this cut, it would push some of that work onto the technical staff. We might have some reduced quality assurance in the data review and reporting delays to EPA.
And Mr. Chair, yes. EPA might not like that.
They probably don't like a lot of things, but we're probably not unique either.
But would EPA be taking the program away from us? See, because that's been one of our issues over the years. We wanted to keep local control. We want DEQ to do stuff that EPA might be doing otherwise. Right? Or am I off from the woods here?
No, Senator Shields, I think at some point, if programs are debilitated enough in their ability to do the work, then EPA looks at whether or not they should take the program back. And in the air program, the governor's recommended budget does take a $1.1 million cut in the air program, and so we have some concern about continuing cuts to the air program, but I'm not going to sit here and say that this cut would cause the program to be returned to EPA. No. But they will look at what is going on in the state and what's happening with funding over time.
The last 9 words in that paragraph, though, say may lead to increased oversight or audits from EPA. I'm just wanting you to see the potential.
Thank you, Senator. Please continue.
Thank you. The next item on the list is item number 8, hazardous waste program, which would reduce our work with businesses to help them comply with a very complex set of federal regulations, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, which is probably the hardest set of federal regulations that I've ever dealt with. It would also reduce technical assistance and data management support in the hazardous waste program.
Continue.
Okay. Item number 7 would cut all the general fund that we currently have doing our certification. It's referred to as a 401 certification. You may have heard that for Section 401 of the Clean Water Act, that federally permitted dredge and fill activities meet state water quality standards. What we would do is we would no longer evaluate and certify some of the smaller removal fill projects under 500,000 cubic yards removal and 2 acres of fill. We'd also not be able to provide some technical assistance to some of the folks who are getting their federal permits to do their projects. Item number 6 would reduce water quality monitoring and data analysis, as well as some system development for some of our small databases like the septic system permits and licenses and the 303D list that we discussed the other day. It would also stop our ability to do GIS mapping of some of the impaired rivers.
Yes. I'm sorry. Now that I know what we're doing, go back to the number 7, the one you just did. So if these applicants or permittees walk away believing they're in compliance when in reality they're not, will that lead to them being denied the ability to do whatever they're going to do, which would also mean denying them ability to create more jobs? Is that what I'm reading? Can I read that into that?
Representative Schaffler, the permits are actually not, we certify whether or not these projects meet water quality standards. The permitting activity is done by either the Army Corps of Engineers or the Department of State Lands. So they can conceivably get a permit, whether or not we have done a certification for these small projects, and proceed to go about doing their work. I think a question might arise if they have a violation of that permit, do they have any vulnerability because they never did get a certification from our department? And obviously, if this is a cut that gets taken, we would have to talk to the Department of Justice and kind of figure out how that would work.
Please continue.
Okay. I would move to page 13. The last two items on the reduction list, as I mentioned earlier, item number 4, this is in fact the lottery. We were required to submit a 10% lottery cut. This is where we would take it. The only lottery money we have is in fact Measure 66 money. It's in our water program, and this would be a cut to the TMDL program, Total Maximum Daily Loads. And again, as we've discussed quite a bit, our concern about cuts in this program is to continue to be able to meet the consent agreement and to have adequate public involvement as we do these TMDLs.
Sure. Yes, Senator Bates.
Thank you. How do you calculate what your lottery funds that come in? Is it limited by, I mean, everyone else's lottery funds is going up. Yours are pretty flat. What's the deal?
Senator Bates, it goes through this process, basically. Our lottery dollars are allocated right now. I think we have $3.5 million, and this is 10% of that. The Oregon plan for salmon and watersheds, when this all was enacted, there was a division of the money among all the agencies, and then there was a shift back to general fund, and then there's been a shift back to Measure 66, and it kind of goes back and forth, and this is where we ended up. In that general exercise.
Well, who makes the decision of what you get from lottery funds at the present time?
Well, I believe it's this body, Senator Bates.
So it's constitutionally directed, but some of it goes to Parks and Rec, some goes to you, and we make the decision about what part you get of that?
Senator Bates, there's actually two pots, and then Paul can jump in if I get this wrong, but the parks part is its own thing. Then there's this other pot that is for salmon recovery, and that's where our allocation comes along with other state agencies as well.
So the decision about what you get from the salmon part is Is it constitutionally decided, or is it by the legislature?
It's both, Senator Bates. There are definitely constraints, and that's why the part we have is very narrowly allocated toward these activities that are clearly related to salmon recovery. So that part is constitutionally directed.
Mr. Chair, I'll ask Paul to research this for it.
Well, he's going to make a comment, but that's fine.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, maybe I can give you a quick primer on Measure 66. 15% of all lottery revenues are dedicated 7.5% to parks and 7.5% to watershed enhancement type activities, including habitat restoration, water quality activities, and that's where this department falls under. Those dollars are under the measure directed to OWEB. This body does not stop the money flowing into the account that OWEB has access to. And this body also then allocates those dollars out for various activities, some of which they allocate to OWEB to fund grants, those types of things. And some get allocated to agencies, in this instance, to work on TMDLs. The governor's budget is proposing this allocation of lottery funds, but ultimately it would be the legislature that would be deciding.
Bottom line is 7.5% is controlled by the legislature.
I think that's the correct answer.
Thank you. What I'm looking for here is funds we have some control over.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I might just point out that some folks might argue that point, but that certainly has been our contention all along.
Yes, Representative Shaw.
In the last biennium or the one before that, was this number, the $353,000, was that coming from the general fund, and did we take the lottery and put it in here and pull the general fund money out and spend it somewhere else? And have we done things like that with that money?
Representative Schaffler, last biennium, you would have seen our $3.5 million total as lottery. When we submitted, I'm going to do this backwards. Am I doing it backwards? No, they're nodding. When we submitted our budget this time, we were asked to submit it back as general fund. And now it's back on lottery fund, so we had to submit this 10% from that $3.5 million as lottery reductions. We generally don't choose, we're told by someone.
Okay, we'll get that person to come on down here and talk whenever you get a chance. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Forgive me.
You are far, far too commonsensical in your approach. Additional questions? Stephanie, are you...
Last item.
One last item
would be a cut in our groundwater monitoring, and that, of course, is last on our list because protecting drinking water is one of our highest priorities. And unless there are any other questions, I would just make a couple of closing comments.
Please.
And we're done. And I guess what I would tell you is, you know, I'm not going to sit here, I think you can probably tell, and tell you that the sky is going to fall if you take these cuts, the 2.1 out of our budget. I do want to point out that since the 0103 biennium, we have taken $15 million in general fund reductions and about 30 positions. The governor's recommended budget adds another $1.7 million to that and another 6.63 FTE. If these cuts are taken that we've discussed today, that would add another $2 million and approximately another 10 positions. So that since 0103, we've lost about 50 positions and about $19 million. And I fully appreciate what the legislature is dealing with in human services and education and all these major generally funded agencies. But I did feel like I needed to put on the record the part that we have contributed. And I did point out, and I would like to remind you, that we are initiating efficiencies. We did, in fact, save $900 million this biennium, and in part some of the requests I'm making this time I would not need to make.
What, 900,000?
900,000.
But you know that I'm paying attention. You know?
Thank you, Senator Biggs.
If you'd done 900 million, I'd be across that distance. Okay, I love you. I stop.
Thank you very much. And my last thing I would say is that I would just remind you that the work that we do at DEQ is really for the benefit of our children and our grandchildren as much as it is for us here in the room today. And I thank you for your courtesy and consideration.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. As always, you've been gracious to answer our questions. And one more question from Representative Shaw.
Actually, it's more of a comment. Thank you for your patience. But, you know, this looks pretty bad for air and water, some of this stuff. I mean, I think it just comes down to the fact that we got no money. And if things just continue to decline, if my daughter can't drink, and I'm exaggerating here, but if she's drinking the water, breathing the air, and we're not keeping an eye on it, what good's it going to do her when she's my age if she can read or not? She can't breathe. So I'm being exaggerating there, but maybe I'm not.
Slightly.
I don't know. It looks pretty bad.
Representative, it's also interesting to note that your own statement earlier in response to a question from Senator Nelson was, you know, is our air and water cleaner today than it was some years ago? And your response was yes, and it is. And that has occurred, Representative, and you should possibly consider this, during a time where the agency has been engaging in efficiencies for some time, where the agency, where we have removed over a period of years. Now, how long we've removed this $15 million in general fund? That's been over...
That was just since 2003.
Okay. So we've not seen that trend change in terms of better or improving air and water quality. A lot of what they're doing, TMDL work, those types of things, are actually relatively new. And we're working through those processes. And so, yes, they've had reductions. They've also had some accompanying fee increases in some of their programs there, too. And they've been successful in many ways at becoming more efficient, removing certain backlogs. We still need to work on some, and we'll continue to do that. So don't be disheartened that all is lost here, but because they really do, are I think, are doing more with less, and that should be noted in our air and water qualities are improved. Senator Shields, you have a rebuttal?
Well, in a sense, I would like to challenge each of you to look closely. Yes, maybe we're cleaner now, but it's like you get this rocket off the ground, you know, you cut back the fuel somewhat because you've attained a certain velocity and height, but you can't keep cutting back forever without seeing the thing go into the drink. And I'm serious about that. My big issue is, will, in fact, there be a tipping point at which the environment will become seriously degraded? You know, we have to keep an eye on this. Yeah, we might have spent more in years past. Yeah, every operation might have had some the luxury of some inefficiencies, and we've worked very hard to eliminate those. But it seems that we're in a position where we cut all the time and just keep doing it. I've been in this legislature 12 years now. Now I'm in my 13th, so I've been watching this a long time. And I haven't seen a year, you know, when we've really gotten anything other than come back with 10% cuts every session, you know. Now, I realize that's at the beginning of the session and we add back, but there's going to come a point at which you have to pay the piper for what you do. And so I joined Representative Schaffler at that point, feeling like, you know, we could end up cutting too much out of programs and we suffer degradation as a result.
Point well taken. Thank you, Senator. Anyone else? Well, with that, thank you very much. Appreciate your indulgence and that of all of your staff and the audience. And we will see you at a later date.
Thank you.
And with that, members, the meeting is adjourned.